Well, hey everyone, welcome back once again to another episode of These Are the Voyages. I'm the captain, Captain Chase McKinney, and I got some utes with me. Well, not quite some utes, but we got my friend some utes. You know, youths.
Did you say utes?
Well, obviously, you know, Lieutenant Commander Eric is here. And my good old buddy who thrives on boiled hot dogs, Lieutenant Commander David. Welcome back, gents.
Yeah, I'm a couple hours less in life.
I mean, you'll make it to the other side before the rest of us, so just let us know what it's like when you get there, okay?
I'll be sure to do that.
You remember to send us a letter, the Lone Star Station, P.O. Box 2455?
Like through a Ouija board or something?
You
got
whatever.
Your own exclusive, like... Lone Star Ouija board?
I mean, whatever works, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you can... listen, Shax came back from the afterlife. There were black mountains, and there were three heads. Tell us if that's what happens.
Is it particularly hot where you are? Prefer not to answer.
It's a nice, cool 113. You're in Texas. Oh, good grief. Well, I haven't seen you gents in forever.
Please don't be upset with me, though. I mean, you know, if you get too upset with me, another one of me might just appear right here.
I've seen it happen. It's not a pretty sight. I mean, you think you know a man, and then he duplicates.
So embarrassing.
Oh, good grief, everyone. Good grief. Well, we are here today to talk a little bit about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2, Episode 5. Can you believe it? It's an embarrassment of duplers. So, I don't know. Do y'all want to do some rambles about anything?
Well, if you just watched the Star Trek Day stuff, there was a panel with Mike McMahon and... Who was there? Who else was there? Rutherford and Tendi. Yeah. The actors who played Rutherford and Tendi. And then Jerry O'Connell kind of crashed the party.
That's
and
true.
It was funny. Mike McMahon was using...
We still
like,
don't know his age, by the way.
He was using Star Trek as a verb. He was like, we have so much Star Trek in these episodes. It's like, we can do all the Star Trek in these coming episodes. And then we got like a mid-season trailer here's a mid-season trailer. Look at what's coming up.
A mid-season trailer of an animated series.
Yes. Yes.
God, the ego. Mm. The ego. The nerve. Mm.
Come on, somebody.
I mean, I honestly can't even remember what was in the mid-season trailer, but he's like, we're going to put so much Star Trek into this back half of this season. Like, the three episodes we did at the end of the season are going to look tame by comparison.
We need to send this guy some Ritalin and some anti-ADHD drugs. Because, like, I mean, like, even, like, looking through this episode, my goodness, it's just so stuffed.
I mean,
there's Star Trek.
There's three plot lines in this episode. There's not just, like, an A plot line, a B line. There's a straight-up C. It's not like a B and a B minus or B extra. It's, like, three different plots.
True.
Yeah.
Well, that and references, just references and references and references. It's like, I mean, I get the overstimulation of the youth of today, but my God, I don't want to watch this show like four times over to get all the Easter eggs. I just don't want to do it.
Well, you only have to watch it once because someone else has watched it 18 times and has found all of them, and you can go online and just read
True.
The list.
True.
That is not our YouTube channel, Eric. Thanks for promoting someone else's show. Appreciate it, bud. Yeah, I'm actually surprised that you didn't notice something, Eric. Like, it was something that I know that you are so incredibly excited for the back half of the season, based on, like, the mid-season trailer. I'm wondering if David might have seen it.
I mean, I'm sure I saw it, but I probably just forgot about it.
Anyway, Shax and I think Mariner were both wearing, like, TOS mirror uniform cutoff uniform things in one of the brief scenes that flash by.
Probably just, you know, blanked it out of my mind because I don't want that ever again.
Same. Well, there you go. There you go. Anyway, so we got a mid-season trailer for Lower Decks Season 2. We're at episode 5 of 10 for this season. So it's all downhill from here. I'm kidding. We're nowhere to go but up from here.
We're on the back nine.
That's right.
We made the turn. I don't know if either of you go golfing.
I feel golfing.
Like, we've been golfing before, Chase.
We have.
You know, I know a lot of people that only do the front nine and then they leave.
Oh. So,
one of my saddest stories, and I can't remember if I've mentioned it on this show or not, is like right after I moved back to Texas and I was, you know, working for the scouts, me and my my district director, we went golfing on a Friday, and I think we only played nine. Yeah, we only played nine holes that day. And I had won this amazing, amazing driver. Does this story sound familiar yet to anyone? No? Okay, so I had won this amazing, amazing driver from a scramble that I played up in Flint, Michigan prior to moving back down. And, I mean, this driver, like, was at least $3,000+, okay? And it was amazing.
Does it hit the ball any longer or straighter than
I don't know. I didn't pay for it. I didn't pay for the thing. Someone's like, if you can, you know, hit the ball and get it on the green, I will give you this. And I'm like, really? So I did that. It was like, you know, like a par whatever, like a par nothing type of thing. So it was great. So I take this driver and we go to, I think it was like Midland Country Club or something like that. And I get it. It was like one of the best shots I'd ever hit. Except for the fact that the ball went straight and kind of hooked exactly where I wanted it to. But the head of the driver also went the opposite direction and snapped right off.
Yes. Yes. I've done that a few times.
I had a feeling that's where the story was going. Like when you brought up the price.
Oh, good grief. So that was my story. That was my story. By the way, Labor Day just happened last week, and got to go to a water park. Got a little bit of sunburned, but it was a good time. My daughter went up and down the same slide. I lost count. Probably 60 freaking times, and I'm sitting on a chair with, like, my wife and, like, our family and their kids. Like, they're all, like, playing and stuff, and man, my daughter, like, went nuts on this one slide, and there were these punk kids, like, I'm talking, like, probably at least 12, 13, 14 years or older, that are just, like, hogging the slide, like, sitting up there, like, roughhousing and stuff, while all these, like, toddlers and, like, young school-age kids are, like, trying to slide down it, and I was worried that I was almost, like, this close to having to give them a stern talking to and be like, "You dang kids, get off my lawn," type of conversation. So,
well, anyway. It's good that your daughter had fun, though.
Yeah, she had a great time. We had a great time. It was the last day they were open, and we got in on some, like, I don't know, whatever, like, friend tickets, because, like, my cousins, they had the, like, a season pass, so we got to pay, like, a lower rate, and my daughter got in for free, so it was good. We had a great time and went to this one place called the Dairy Palace, and man, those burgers were freaking huge, dude. Like, I don't know if it's, like, just a one city kind of, like, it's a local, like, burger joint or what, but proportions were huge for a burger joint.
is this one of those, oh, everything's bigger in Texas jokes or something like that, Chase? Do you have a punchline for this giant burger in Texas?
Hey, don't mess with Texas, my man. Because you know what? The stars at night, they are, in fact, big and bright. So, Texas is the greatest nation in the United States. I'm just saying. I mean, don't be jealous. Don't be jealous.
I'm not jealous. I've been here 2 months, and I'm not jealous.
Let's go ahead and let's jump right into it. Let's talk about episode 5, again, An Embarrassment of Duplers. If this is your first time listening to this show, this is not spoiler-free. We will be spoiling the heck out of this crap, talking about different storylines, plot points, and just whatever else tickles our fancy whenever we're talking about it. So if you haven't watched it, hit the pause button, go give it a go on Paramount Plus, and then come on back and hit play whenever you're ready to rock and roll with us. So that being said, we have Richard Kind, who's guesting this week. I recognized it as soon as he started speaking, and I was like, okay, we're going to have that kind of episode today. Sweet.
Love Richard Kind. To most people, he's probably like, they don't recognize the name, but if they saw him, a picture of him, yeah, they'd be like, that guy! I know that guy! He's a total that guy.
I'd say, I mean, for me, like, the stuff that comes to mind more readily for Richard Kind is going to be, like, Spin City.
It's definitely Spin City.
There's that, and then, of course, another sci-fi movie, the original Stargate movie.
Yep.
That he made an appearance in.
Yeah. He's also in 2 episodes of Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I forgot about that, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like the invincibility.
He's like the goofish villain. Not really a villain, but like the goofball antagonist.
Right.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So, He's ambassador, right?
Yeah, he's like an ambassador.
Yep. He's an ambassador that's on the Cerritos, been there for about a week or so, and the whole ship essentially has been on pins and needles because they have essentially low self-confidence, and if there's any kind of, like, I don't know, embarrassment or whatever it might be, they basically are like tribbles. They just start multiplying and stuff. So
I love the setup for this episode because it actually has a Star Trek feel. You know, we open with a captain's log. The Stardate whatever, the Cerritos is, you know, we picked up an ambassador to this planet and we're on our way to this space station for this meeting, important meeting. Like, a lot of Star Trek episodes start like that, and I really like the setup and the premise of, I guess, is this the A-plot? I mean, I'm not sure if this turns out to be the A-plot, but I like that setup.
So, the captain's log, Stardate 58053.9, the Cerritos is escorting a Dupler emissary to Starbase 25 for trade negotiations. Duplers are a species which involuntarily duplicate as an emotional defense mechanism. We've been walking on eggshells the entire ship. The entire trip. So there you go. Yeah, they just duplicate over and over and over again for their own defense. So,
For their own defense? How is that a defense mechanism?
I don't know. I mean, we see what happens at the very end of this episode. that's a defense, I guess. But definitely interesting. So we're cutting kind of back and forth throughout this episode, at least in the beginning, between them and Beckett Mariner and Bradford Boimler, who are down moving crates. Bradward Boimler. You know, moving crates and doing all this menial stuff over and over again. They're complaining about, we're always moving crates, dang it. I feel that. I feel like I'm always moving crates, by the way.
That feels like a lower deck job. Okay, move the crates. Now move the crates back. Now move the crates.
Keep moving the crates. Hey, did you move the crates yet? David, did you move the crates?
No, I'm a commander. I don't have to do that. All I have to do is fight black-hearted mountains and mother effigies and I don't know, whatever. It's fine.
Which, by the way, Jerry O'Connell, he was like, I'll have you know, I'm a commander. I'm not a lower decker. In one of the interviews, by the way, on Star Trek Day,
yeah,
which was kind of funny. And there's apparently this party, this big old shindig that's happening at Starbase 25, right? And they want to go. Everyone wants to go to this party. It's a big old command party, we find out.
Yeah, Starbase 25 or the mall.
Yeah, 3 years ago, someone got super drunk and was halfway to the Delta Quadrant before they sobered up.
Some admiral.
I thought we drank Synthahol in the Federation.
We do. Romulan ale should be illegal.
Like, no. Listen. I don't want to get into a big, like, alcohol drinking discussion here, but, like, I enjoy a beverage every now and then. Maybe a couple, right? Always in moderation.
Drink responsibly.
But okay, what is the point of Synthahol? Like, people are not out there drinking alcohol just for the taste alone. They're out there drinking it for the effect that it has on you. So, like, this is something that's always, for like 20 years, I was like, what is the point of Synthahol? Like, are people really just like, oh, I just love the taste of it, and I don't want any of the effects of what the alcohol is doing to me?
Quick question, though, for you guys. Was Synthahol ever referenced in, like, the original series, or did that come around more towards, like, Next Gen?
I think it was a Next Gen thing.
Next Gen, yeah.
Okay. Well, in the 90s, there was a slight push for non-alcoholic beer. Not because people necessarily wanted it, but it was out there. And even now, if you guys remember, within the last couple years, I do remember seeing Heineken commercials. You know, dude sitting in a car with a non-alcoholic Heineken, and the police, you know, the police comes up. He's like, oh, no, it's a non-alcoholic. It's like, no, you idiot, get out of this parking space. I don't get the whole Synthahol thing, but they have said several times, though, that it's like, oh, you can get the real stuff too, but yeah, I mean, you guys want to just sit down and drink some non-alcoholic Bud Lights, you know, that'd be a real fun night in 10 Forward. I would really love to do that with all of my friends.
look, there's another podcast that I listen to, and like every now and again, you know, we've talked about like advertisements and stuff, or advertisements, however you pronounce it. And one of them, I think, is Heineken. Or maybe it's Smirnoff, or it's something, and it's talking about, like, enjoy the taste, enjoy the experience without any of the experience of being drunk.
Enjoy the experience without the experience.
So I'm like, I mean, I don't drink, but, like, I don't know why anyone would spend money on that, like. Look, I've had a Heineken before, like on my 21st birthday. That's like the only time I've ever drank. And like and if you're a Heineken fan,
it doesn't taste
more power
too.
No, it tastes like what I think cat urine would taste like. So
yeah,
like,
it's not my thing either.
So like, if you want like nasty tasting water, go drink like, you know, mineral water or something, for Pete's sake. Throwing all those Topo Chico fans under the bus, by the way.
Maybe the imagination at this time is just so heightened that they can just imagine being drunk. All they need is a vessel that tastes like it, and they can just will themselves into a stupor.
I mean, there you go. Well, it says, so I just looked something up. It says, although Synthahol was served on starships at least as early as the 2250s, they weren't as popular until the 24th century. Montgomery Scott hadn't even heard of it until 2369, apparently.
Now in the episode Relics, probably?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know.
I've been drinking scotch since before you were born.
Before your grandfather was even in diapers.
There you go. I wasn't going to attempt to do a scotch accent.
Yeah.
Or a Canadian's interpretation of a Scotch accent.
Ooh, look at you go. Man, you know you're Jimmy Doohan, don't you? All right. Well, this is going off the rails real quick. So, stuff starts hitting the fan, right? And the duplers start duplicating. And that's about it. Kidding. That's what's happening on the ship. Oh my gosh. I didn't mean, we've been a horrible guest.
Oh no, they're giving us the silent treatment. I mean, that's pretty much what happens, right?
That's pretty much what happens, yeah.
I will say though that the resolution to that whole storyline, like, do the duplers not know that? Like, do they not know how to unduplicate? Because if they don't, that would be like a huge, like, potential societal shift. Because you have to think, they've totally duplicated.
Oh, yeah.
So now they can be one again. Like, instant decrease in population. I don't know. It seems like that would be a big, like, an actual big thing if they don't already know it.
I mean, yeah, like, if they're just on their own planet and everyone starts duplicating, like, I don't know how many different original duplers there are, like, that have duplicated, but, like, if, like, is everybody the same person, or are there a lot of other ones?
Think about, like, a duplicate who maybe lived a life, like, a full life, and they're now not even the same, and then all of a sudden they start, oh my god, I'm coming back! No! It'd be a huge ethical question at that point, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It would be, yeah. Yeah, but you're right, like, have they... Is it just on the Jupiter planet when people start duplicating, they get more self-conscious and upset, and they just can't stop duplicating, and no one's ever even tried to fix that problem? But you're right, that is a huge... I didn't even think about that, but that is a huge, like, societal, species, like, changing thing if they've never learned to come back together.
Okay,
because if it was something that they knew about, why wouldn't they just tell when they start duplicating? Yeah. Why wouldn't one of them just mention it, and then we can fix the problem?
Well, and what if, like, two duplicates had... Well, I don't know how they reproduce, but let's just say they reproduce like we reproduce, and they had, like, a little baby. Now that's an offspring of two duplicates. Like, does that get absorbed, or is that now its own individual person? That's kind of a rabbit hole, man. I don't know. I don't want to. I haven't had enough synthahol for that.
So, serious question, but potentially funny question. Like, is there a prime directive violation in that, though? In like what happened, like, with Captain Freeman and, like, the senior staff and, like, the whole ship. You know, like, if we go down, like, this trail that David is proposing, right? Like, of all this, like, duplication, this societal shift, and they've just been, like, enabling one another, like, walking on eggshells themselves as a society, and now they're being, like, forcibly singled?
Reintegrated?
Unduped?
Well, think about the two Rikers. Two Rikers. Now, obviously, that was a transporter thing and a storm and all that, but let's say that they could have, like,
re-merged.
Put them back together.
Yeah.
Now you've just taken two very individual people who have lived two very individually different lives, as we saw in that episode. Like, the... Well, there was also
The Tuvix episode?
Yeah.
Now you've got a new person, right, after they've been combined for months.
I don't think Lower Decks had this in mind, though.
I think we're way thinking about it a lot more than Mike McMahon thought about
it. Okay, Eric, okay, I need you to go in the Wayback Machine. I need you to, like, you know, go computer on us, okay? So, Tribbles, were they sentient?
I don't think so. I think they were just, like, almost like what you would think of, like, a bacteria that just reproduces.
Mm-hmm.
I know bacteria, I don't think reproduce is the right word, but that just divides or multiplies or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, like the cellular division type of thing.
Yeah.
Like it's part, yeah. part of their
growth
as an organism.
I don't think I would consider tribbles sentient.
Okay, I mean, yeah, like they were just fuzzballs that freaking moved about and vibrated and just duplicated over and over again. So, like, that, I mean, yeah, that brings in, like, an issue, like, with this whole sentience thing. Thanks a lot, David, for making us go all Star Trek. Like, our Star Trek is at, like, a level, like, 8 now. Like, that's how much Star Trek we're having right now, according to Mike McMahon.
We're having a lot of Star Trek.
We're having a lot of Star Trek right now.
Let me just sprinkle a little Star Trek on you.
Yeah, just a little sprinkle. Just a little bit. That would be very interesting. Like, if this got revisited, right? Like, as, like, a prime directive violation, as, like, I don't know, like, some kind of trial, like, they might have done. Like, not in the same way, but, like, almost in the same vein as, like, Measure of a Man. Like, trying to prove, or, like, violation or proof or whatever of, like, some kind of sentience thing with the Duplers. Because, like, this is, we've never seen the Duplers before that I'm aware of. You know, who this reminded me of, though? And I'm completely blanking on the name. I think it was a season one, maybe a season two episode, where it was, what was it? The dude that was all about himself, he came in, it was like the hand game thing, that, like, no one can beat me.
Oh, yeah,
so Data plays it.
Yeah, the... I know exactly what episode you're talking about, and I'm the guy who always knows the names of the episodes.
Eric, you're disappointing me right now.
Yes, it was Riker, and they were playing war games. Riker took over command of that, like, old ship.
If only there was a way we could find out the name of that episode.
I know, but I'm the guy who always knows the names of the episodes. Like, when you two are talking on a podcast and I'm not here, you're like, Eric is yelling at us right now because we don't know the name of this episode.
Peak performance.
Yep, that's I was it. Just yep. just about there.
Yep. Peak performance.
Yep.
Yep.
And toward the, like, end of season two.
It's crazy, okay? Like, I'm looking at a still of the dude, right? Whatever his name is. And... you know what? I'm just going to show it. Like, I know people in listener land, they won't be able to see it. But, like, just look. Like, there is some kind of inspiration, I think, with how, like, the Dupler was dressed. Now, mind you, like, the robes were different, but, like, they had, like, a similar brooch, whatever thing right here. You know, that was on his chest, that's on this guy's chest. Like, some of, like, the facial structure stuff. I don't know. Like, am I crazy? What do y'all think?
Well, I mean, that was Sirna Kolrami of the Zakdorn.
So there we go.
That guy's name. But, so... I mean, I could see maybe a little bit of similarities in their appearance.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We're putting in too much Star Trek right now. There's too much Star Trek going on.
Yes, we're Star Trekking too much.
We are Star Trekking way too much, guys. We need to stop it. So, but yeah, okay. So, like, that's, like, the Freeman storyline, like, with the Duplers and, like, them duplicating like crazy and, like, Freeman just saying, yeah, just berate them and it should be fine, type of thing. Okay, that storyline's over. Congratulations.
Is that the A line? I know we get the title of the episode, but would you consider that the A plot?
No. I mean,
think that's the B plot.
Yeah, I think they spent more time with Boimler and
Mariner than they did anyone else. There, I mean, like, if we're talking, like, time on screen, like, story development of it, I would probably, regardless of whether it is or it isn't, I'd probably put A, Mariner, Boimler. I put B, Rutherford and Tendi, and C, with Freeman and the Duplers.
Oh, you actually think this is the C plot?
Potentially. I mean, because, like...
I mean, it is the title plot line.
I know it is. I know it is. But I just think we get more time with the others. Like, there's just more development with the other lower deckers than the senior staff. I don't know.
I mean, I don't feel like the senior staff has any character development through one and a half seasons of this show. But I think that's probably the point, is that the senior staff is not supposed to have character development.
Yeah. Apart from, you know, Freeman's a micromanager, and she needs to back off. So, whatever it ends up being, whether it's the A, the B, or the C, that's fine. Who do you want to talk about next? Do you want to talk about Boimler and Mariner, or do you want to talk about Tendi and Rutherford? Doesn't matter to me.
You might as well do Tendi and Rutherford, seeing as they're kind of like hand in hand with the whole.
Yeah, since it goes along with the Duplers a little bit.
Okay. So, did y'all like the little Eagle Moss model ships?
That's totally what it was. Well, Eagle Moss is coming out with a Cerritos model in real life, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
No, I'm sure Go ahead.
I'm sure when you listen to Delta Flyers or any Star Trek podcast, you hear something about Eagle Moss. Like, they're always on that. Anyways, go ahead, Eric.
No, I like the fact that Rutherford is a builder. He's an engineer. He fixes starships in real life, so he's trying to build and fix a little model thing. I like that. That's a neat idea. And I feel like we've said this on the podcast before. Rutherford is the character who's had the most development over the run of this show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we finally get his first name here as well. I don't think we've had a first name for him.
I think it was mentioned. I mean, they kept calling him Sam. But, like, I think they said Sam in, like, the first season, maybe. But it's a shortened version of, I'm probably going to butcher it, but Samanthan?
Samanthan, right?
Yeah.
It's like Samantha, but, like, with the male N. The male version.
There you go. Is that what you're going to name your son, Eric, when you have one?
Yes, Samanthan. Because I want him to get beat up and bullied at school.
Hey, now.
Just like a boy named Sue.
There you go.
Hey, there are boys named Carol. Double R.
Are there?
Yeah, I'm sure they go by their middle names, too.
Sue. Carol Sue. So, yeah, like, so I kind of enjoyed, I enjoyed the Rutherford and Tendi. I think I said it last time, or one of the past times, that Rutherford is my favorite of the Lower Deck squad. I enjoy his stories the most. And the fact that he's, like, competing with himself, like, he's like, I feel like, at one point, he's like, I feel like I'm competing with a ghost. And, like, that is, like, spot on. I love that. Especially like with what we're seeing like throughout like the ship and you know like trying to escape like the Duplers and just trying to build the Cerritos, which we find out like they always stopped at the warp core, I think, like putting in the warp core.
Yeah.
So I don't know, and like the fact that they're making up notes, like he's making up notes so that they don't have to do work, basically like their own buffer time essentially. I have done that a time or two.
It was interesting though, because I feel like the only attempt at any sort of seriousness kind of comes from the two characters, and in this, it's like you said, it's his sort of existential crisis of effectively losing a year of his life, mm-hmm. and he's trying to backtrack. But he's not having the success that he thinks he should have. I'm an engineer. I should be able to fix this model. It's like, well, but the relevant information is you didn't understand that this was just like a game for us. It wasn't, we weren't trying to complete it. We were just trying to have time away from everything else, which is good. It's like a hobby, you know, mm-hmm. we all waste time on our hobbies. We've wasted, you know what? I wouldn't say wasted. We've spent a couple hours today just talking about, you know, Trek and stuff. But yeah, I do like that aspect of it, because as I think we've all kind of talked about, sometimes the humor just kind of like gets a little bit old at times. It's good to have something that's a little bit more realistic, I guess.
Yeah. Well, now I know how you really feel about these recordings, by the way, David.
I mean, it was a slip of the tongue. You know, your check will be in the mail. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
No, but I also think this is something you see in the real life of anyone who has an injury or something along that lines. They try to rush themselves back because they're like, I have to be that same person I was before. And maybe it takes more time, and maybe you need to take more time, and don't compete with, just like you said, I'm competing with a ghost. Maybe don't try to compete. Don't force yourself to get back to where you were beforehand. I think that's kind of a lesson and a serious thing that we could actually take from this episode.
Well, yeah. There's a YouTuber that I listen to and watch whatever semi-regularly, and there was something that happened with their heart and their lungs and stuff like that, and they had to go get surgery. And they said that the doctors were telling them that it's going to be 12 weeks before you can start really doing anything like you used to. Like, you're not going to be able to go upstairs, you're not going to be able to go to the gym or do X, Y, and Z things. And they're like, well, watch me, basically. And what ended up happening is, I guess, like, part of his chest started to kind of like fall in on itself, and he was mere moments away from just complete death. And anyways, they ended up like having to go in and I think do a surgery over again and like some other stuff basically. And fortunately, he's fine now. But I mean, that's like a real life case. Like, it's not, you know, getting a cybernetic implant removed from your noggin for Pete's sake. But like to y'all's point, like we try so hard to get back to normal so that we're not seen as weak. We're not seen as invalids. We're not seen as this, that, or the other thing, that we diminish, we dismiss our own self-care, our own healing that we need to do from whatever the heck has gone on. So the fact that they highlighted that, I loved it. So I think it was a great part of his development and the whole thing. Like, I'm competing with myself. Like, I'm fighting against a ghost, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So I thought one of the funnier moments with them, like, after, you know, Tendi would like said, no, it was never like that. You know, you would do this, that, or the other thing. And we would always stop at the warp core. And it was the warp. I love this warp core part, guys. I love this so much. Like, they detonated the warp core and they got two tiny little tongs. And they had like a little chipmunk sounding computer.
Yeah, a little computer.
Yeah,
voice.
That was good. I
with
like
a little
that.
5-second countdown was awesome. With all, I mean, the drama.
Yeah, this thing had like a phaser on it earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, what models are they? What are they giving these people?
But I also love when he looked inside. Oh, look, there's a Mariner making fun of a Boimler.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And like he just like grabs the warp core like after it's ejected, and like he throws it all dramatically at the ladder. Or the whatever the
hatch to break
hatch
it open.
Yeah, and like it's all dramatic. And it's like, poof, poof.
Yeah,
thinking it was going to be this like massive explosion, and it wasn't. Loved it. Oh,
it was,
man,
good.
That was really good, really, really good, as far as I'm concerned. So, is that it for the Tendi and Rutherford stuff, or am I missing something?
No, I think that's it.
That's basically it, yeah.
Wow, okay. So I guess let's talk about the Mariner Boimler stuff, okay? So again, they're heading to Starbase 25 and to complete this diplomatic mission drop-off thing. And oh, by the way, there's this command party that's taking place there. And anyway, they don't want to move crates back and forth anymore. So let's pretend to be William Boimler of the Titan, since he's elsewhere, and we're gonna get into this party and have a good time.
Well, first, let's disregard our duties and orders and leave the ship because we don't want to deal with the Dupler thing, and then go find the party planet because we want to. I mean, what? They just leave.
I mean, that sounds like something Mariner would do, but you think the character of Boimler would be like, wait, we can't leave our duty. Like, that's how his character has been developed so far through the show, is like, I'm on duty. I need to get a promotion.
No court martial.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But this doesn't seem in character for Boimler to do this.
But to be fair, he did want to notify his duplicate that he was going to pretend to be him at a party, which is very much a Boimler thing. 100% yes. A Boimler thing.
100%.
So, okay, so we get down there, you know, we get in some dress uniforms for this party, and we're checking stuff out, and by the way, we run into this bad guy that Mariner has some history with, and Data makes an appearance. Did y'all like that? Data making an appearance?
A few of them were lore.
In bubble bath form.
Like, this is after Nemesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Data's already dead at this point?
Yes. By at least a year and a half, 2 years, yes.
Okay, all right. So maybe it's like Data just died. Have your commemorative bubble bath to remember this awesome Starfleet officer.
Do you think that the scent for his bubble bath was called Blue Skies and it smelled like blueberries?
Stuff.
Oh, obviously. What do you think Lore's scent was?
Betrayal.
Descent.
His descent.
It's his descent. Yeah, like that. In one of the episodes that he comes.
Yeah, I got it.
But I think it's called Descent, but I think it smells like bubblegum.
Bubblegum.
Yeah. Lore seems like a bubblegum kind of guy. Maybe cotton candy. I don't know. I mean, I don't know, guys. I mean, that's what I'm going with.
I don't know.
Maybe we should put that out there. What does Lore seem like? Is Lore a bubblegum or a cotton candy kind of guy? Tweet that. You can reply to @notEric on Twitter.
I'm telling you, that's got to be a guy out there, and we can't just dox that guy.
Yeah, there probably is somebody like whose Twitter handle.
You don't
is.
Understand. I'm not Eric. I don't even like Star Trek. I'm not Eric. Poor guy.
Anyway, listen.
We should stop using that, by the way. I'm just saying. We probably should.
Anyway, so like, what happens after this is so not interesting to me at all. Like, oh, I'll tell you where the super secret location of the party is if you deliver these bubble baths. But what you don't know is there's illegal Klingon disruptors hidden under there, and you're gonna get arrested by the cops and go to jail. And then we go on some high speed chase through the station, which was just
the mall.
Not interesting to me at all. Like,
It just during the setup of that, Mariner says something about like, oh, station security is corrupt and blah blah blah. On a Starfleet station,
resembles
a 1990s mall. I don't know. I mean, I just see it as the mall that they literally broke apart with like some sand dune runners or something like that. It's kind of one of those like we've sort of talked about throughout the series about suspending disbelief of the reality that we actually should have type of deal. Like, yes, two Starfleet officers are totally just going to go barrel through the mall and then find themselves a nice bar somewhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but yeah, is this a Starfleet station? It's called Starbase 26, but if it is a Starfleet station, the security would be Starfleet security, who wouldn't be corrupt, yeah. And why would they want to then take their comm badges and sell them on the black market? They have their own comm badges. What are comm badges worth on the black market?
It's Mariner, man. Like, anyone that follows the rules is, like, corrupt, right? I mean, that's my stretch on that.
Yeah, but but then again, like, okay, now we're going on this high-speed chase. Like, is this... Like, I'm just imagining the promenade on Deep Space Nine. This is not big enough to drive cars on. It's not. Like, it's totally... You cannot drive a car through there without... It may maybe one, but it's going to be tight. It's going to be tight.
Yeah.
And then, like, okay, so now they're just barreling through this on this high-speed chase, and there's a Christopher Pike-type guy in his little beepy little chair. Okay, like... And then... They drive through a Vulcan ship. Like, Vulcans!
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Like, that, first of all, is the Vulcan ship big enough to drive your car through? Because there's just, like, two people sitting in the cockpit. I don't know. And then they fly through the aviary and it's like, oh, we're going to hit that guy. The guy's like, I'm going to die. Nope, we didn't hit him. We hit the brakes and we... fell into the water. Like, it's just, I don't know, it just wasn't interesting at all to me.
Yeah, weird kind of cringy suicide joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't that, actually.
I've never been big on that kind of humor, and we all have our reasons why, but I've never been big into that. The bird thing, was that supposed to be something that we were supposed to know about, like the birds?
That's the thing I was wondering about.
Yeah, they were like, let's move to the aviary. It'll be nice and quiet or whatever, or something like that. I didn't know who that was supposed to be.
I didn't have time to look into it too much, but I was thinking that if it was going to be from anything, it would have been from the animated series that I just didn't know about.
Okay. Yeah, and I was like, birds?
There was one... animated series, a little Easter egg that I did see a little bit later on in this storyline, like one of the characters. So, anyway.
Hey, I do have a question though. This bar that they all wind up was this because I haven't rewatched it in a while. This wasn't supposed to be like the bar from Enterprise, was it? Like the first episode that they were all in that bar that everybody always went to.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I don't know. It's been a while since I've watched a series, and I thought that there was like a jukebox in there or something. Well, they also had the test ship in the bar. Well, I mean a model of the test ship from Enterprise. So that's it. Well, they also had a gate, you know, the gate as well. So anyway, I kind of wondered if that was the thing or not.
So yeah, in the bar they had the Doomsday Machine.
Yeah,
they had
that.
They had the Guardian. They had the Phoenix. On the wall, in one of the pictures, there was a little Star Trek The Animated Series character that they had like a still of. And it was the character M. Ress, I think that's how you pronounce it. She was a relief communications officer on the animated series. If you go back and look, or if you've ever seen the animated series, she's like this feline, lion-looking... officer, basically, that was in there. But yeah, apparently, yeah, Spock and Kirk used to hang out at this bar.
Let's carve our names into like besties into a tree, right?
Yeah, man, let's do it. Oh, good grief!
But okay, I want to talk about this party and the guest list. Okay, I understand why, like. Somebody like Mariner wouldn't be allowed in because it's supposed to be the captain's party.
Yeah, it's command. Like, it's a command party.
But, like, why would... to me, this joke doesn't land of, like, oh, the Cerritos is such an unimportant ship that her captain is not allowed in. It doesn't seem like a very Starfleet thing to do. If this is a captain's party and you are a captain of a starship, it doesn't, there's no, okay, oh, the Enterprise is here, and you have, like, tiers of ships, right? Luna class and above, only in, I don't know what a Luna class ship is, I don't know if that's an actual thing or not, but it
that's
just,
the Titan. The Titan
the Titan is a Luna class ship?
Yeah.
Then this would feels like to me it would be like a super exclusive party, and you'd be excluding a lot of people below that, because the Titan to me seems like a pretty important ship that would be high in the pecking order, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I don't like this idea of excluding a Starfleet captain because they're not important enough.
Right. I mean, I was thinking the same thing, like, what's, I mean, apart from, like, the Luna being the Titan, like, a Luna class being the Titan, like, why? Like, why are we putting so much on, like, a certain class of ship, right, compared to other classes? Like, a Constitution versus a Constellation, an Experimental versus a Galaxy, a Sovereign versus a California class. Like, why? If you're a captain, if you have four pips on your collar, doesn't matter what kind of how big your ship is, get after it. I mean, like, freaking Kirk's ship, the original 1701, I mean, it was pretty small by comparison, like with its crew complement, its deck size and everything like that, but yet it did great feats for Starfleet and just the Federation as a whole. And I mean, yeah, it was Kirk that was the captain at one point, but there were other captains before Kirk that did great things too, and captains that came after Kirk that did great things too. So yeah, that was like something that kind of did in fact rub me the wrong way whenever they were doing that, like with that dumb joke, that dumb comment. So but in the party though, Boimler gets through somehow, being a lieutenant junior grade, even though he's only wearing an ensign pip. And we see Shelby in a non-speaking role. So she made captain. How about that?
Did anyone have any doubts?
No.
No.
No. So we saw Shelby. And by the way, I don't know if y'all knew this or if people that are listening to this knew this, but her first officer, the one, like the alien-looking thing
with
that's standing right next to her.
The upward triangle head?
Right? Yep. That was actually the original design for Saru. Like, that was how Saru's Kelpian species were originally going to look.
I feel like I've seen this aliens in, like, one of the J.J. Abrams movies. I feel like I've seen somebody with the who looked like this guy in this episode.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. And if that was going to be on anything, I think it would have been probably 2009.
Yeah, I think I didn't know the thing about Saru because I just thought it was supposed to be one of those J.J. Abrams type that I've seen.
Yeah. So whether like they've borrowed or whatever, I mean, it was, I guess, like interesting, I suppose, like just knowing like that was essentially what Saru's look was going to be for a little while. And I'm glad that we got what we got, you know, with like,
yeah,
with Saru.
O'Connor was there. He was the DJ.
Yeah, he was.
What?
Didn't age a bit. Didn't
nope,
age a
didn't
bit.
Didn't age a bit. Billy Campbell.
He's got
the Rocketeer. Billy Campbell, you know, the Rocketeer of like 30 years ago. I mean, the guy still looks pretty good.
Yeah, did y'all... So, quick side trail. Did you know they're making a Rocketeer movie again?
A remake or a sequel? Is Billy Campbell
sequel.
Coming back?
God, I hope Billy Campbell comes back. But it's apparently going to... I think the concept right now has to do with a Tuskegee Airman type of person taking over the mantle of the Rocketeer. So I would love to see... Like, if that does in fact happen, I would love to see, like, a handoff of, like, Billy Campbell's, you know, Cliff Secord to this new one. We already had, like, a Disney Junior, the Rocketeer, that my daughter's, like, nuts about. And, like, they have the Rocketeer stuff plastered all over it, so... and that kid Rocketeer is, like the great-great-granddaughter of the original Rocketeer.
Okay, because that was, like, World War One, wasn't it?
Or
was it World War II?
It was 19... 30s, actually.
Okay, so, yeah. In between World Wars. Okay.
Yeah. But we saw the Nazis make an appearance towards the end of the original Rocketeer, okay. which came out June 21st, 1991. So it has been 30 years since it came out.
Anyway. Nice.
Anyway. Yeah.
The Outrageous O'Connor.
Yeah, didn't Star age Trek a
does,
bit.
Star Trek does humor.
Yeah, and he's got like a little boombox on his shoulder. That was cool. A little callback to the 90s, by the way. 80s and 90s. Loved it.
Okay, so the other... there's Captain Shelby in her number one, and there's Captain Exley in his number one. Who is Captain Exley? Is that a reference that I missed? Because I was like, is it Captain Exley the little dude on the shoulder, or is he the big guy... with the dude sitting on the shoulder?
I have no idea.
Yeah, because I didn't get that. It was the like, I normally get a lot of the references, but I didn't get this one. No, David doesn't know.
So Captain Exley, just looking it up real quick, is the smaller one.
The little dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the little dude in that, the on Clone Wars, the little dude.
No.
He's like the cartographer guy who went with the D Squad or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man, I can't remember his name, but yeah, I know.
Was that the one with like the droids and like...
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did droid mission, yeah.
Yeah, yes. The D Squad.
And he wasn't too happy with him or something like that. Anyway, yeah, but yeah, Exley was the one that was sitting on the shoulder of his number one. I just looked that up.
Okay, but who is Exley?
It's a great question.
It's not a reference that we're supposed to get?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Nope.
No, I'm at Memory Alpha looking at it now in real time, and nope. There's no reference to anything else. Like, his only appearance is here. So,
okay,
cool
beans.
So I mean, that's essentially it. I mean, apart from like, you know, like bringing like the senior officers down to the planet after, you know, taking care of the Dupler situation, you know, the ambassador of the Duplers is like, hey, I need a place to kind of chill and kill some time. Do you know a place where I can do that? It's kind of chill. Yes, I do. After, you know, Freeman has been rejected, beams him right into the middle of a party, and then we have some crazy over-the-top duplication of Duplers going on.
And that's like at the end of The Trouble with Tribbles. Like, where did you put the Tribbles, right?
Yeah.
And not only that, but like then they just all go to the Cheers bar and have a good time together.
Where everybody knows your name.
So... anyway, that's it. I mean, I know we spent a good amount of time talking about it, but that's it. Did y'all think that there was any like Delta worthy stuff in this?
I'm trying to find something.
Well, they figure out how to deal with a, I guess, potentially threatening situation. The command crew did on accident.
I mean, I'm trying to find something with like Rutherford building a little ship. That's some engineering stuff. I'm trying to find that there.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything really. So for me, it's nada.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it, but I'm just not seeing it.
Okay. Well, let's get into our numerical rating. So, 1 being a dumpster fire, 10 being absolutely amazing. Gene would be proud, and stuff of the stuff that was produced. David, let's start with you on your number rating for this episode.
I mean, I think it was probably the best episode that we've had of this season. At the very least, it told a story as opposed to just made sex jokes. So, I don't know, though. It's like I'm really hesitant to even give it a very high score just because it's just such an ADHD nightmare to me. Like, there's too much packed in such a short amount of time, and it becomes like a flashing light just on the side of your face. Like, look at me, 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 look at me. It's like, but I don't really want to look at you that close. I just want you to be simpler. But, you know, I mean, with the sort of getting past the ridiculous, you know, 1990s mall chase scene, I'm just going to give it like a 7.5. It was actually mildly entertaining. I like the Beast stories, and it gave me an existential crisis moment trying to think about the Duplers, so that was nice.
Nice. Eric, you want to go next?
Okay, yeah. So the only story that I actually enjoyed was the Rutherford Tendy story. The other ones are just, like, don't really do much for me. What I will say, though, is that I love the concept of the Duplers. Like, that's me. I'm like, oh my god, people don't like me. People don't want me here. Like, everyone wants me to leave. Like, oh no, I'm freaking out. Like, that is totally, like, my personality. And I'm like, oh my god, why is he giving me the silent treatment? Oh my god, why is he talking to me? Oh my god, am I like, So I can relate to that idea of the Dupler. Although you don't want a second one of me right here. That would just be not good. But other than that, like, the Beckett, the Mariner, and the Boimler thing didn't do anything for me. It was just boring. Like, I didn't like the excluding people from the party. I don't think this is the best episode of this season. I still think that would be the second episode. I think I'm just going to give it a 6 and move on.
Okay. All right. So we're all over the place so far with these ratings. Love it, by the way. So this has been, I'm pretty sure this has been my favorite episode of this season so far. I did not mind watching it again. I think, in fact, this is the only episode that I've watched more than once, to be completely honest with you. I didn't really care too much about, like, the Boimler, Mariner stuff. Like, the only part of it that I liked was the bar. That was it. Like, going to Cheers and having a good time. That was it. Like Eric, it was mainly the Rutherford and Tendy stuff that I really liked. The Dupler stuff was just funny. It was just right. It was just right with the humor without it being annoying. So I really liked that. I liked it. To me, like, a lot of it felt balanced. It was just an enjoyable story for me. This is one that I do expect to want to watch time and time again. Like, if I'm, like, creating, like, a list of, like, Lower Decks episodes, like, this is on, like, that list. So I'm about to freak Eric out on this, but I'm giving this, like, I don't know, like a 7.9, an 8 for me. I really like this episode.
Okay. It has an 8.1 rating on IMDb.
How about that?
Well, so, I will say this, though. It did chart statistically higher than pretty much everything we've done.
That is true also.
So that's a positive, you know?
So Eric gave it a 6. David, you said what, a 7.6?
I'd say 7.5 is
7.5, okay. Yeah. And 7.9, 8, something like that for me.
And I
cool.
gave it a 6.
Yeah. There we go. Things are normal again, guys.
Yes, things I'm are the normal low, again. I'm the low one.
Hey, don't worry. Next week we'll get back our sex jokes and our shallow humor. It'll be great, and we'll get back to normal, actual normal.
Actual normal. Yeah, this is like a Yeah, this is just weird. Yeah, this is skewing the data. skewing the data. Data.
It's a strange new world.
One of discovery, right?
Yes. One of voyaging.
And deep space nining. Okay, we gotta stop.
A new generation.
The next new generation. One of
animated,
one of animated prodigiousness.
It's a real enterprise of, I'm done.
Man, you just hit me right in the face of the heart right there, man.
You know,
don't make me pick so hard.
I just have to go where my heart takes me.
You just made me pick.
It'll never
really
bend
hard.
Or break me.
Hmm.
Wow. Nothing but blue skies.
And then a lady yelling.
Oh, good grief. Okay, this episode needs to end like yesterday.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the thing. Let's do the thing.
Do the thing.
Do the thing.
What's the thing?
The your ending thing.
Do you want to do the ending thing?
No, you want to do it.
Does David want to do the ending thing?
No.
Chase, okay, just get us out of here. Like, emergency beam out.
Just punch it. Punch it, please.
All right, let's fly out of here. All right, here we go. Good. All right. Well, to all the Elorians, the Beta Zed folks, the Klingons, the Romulans, the humans, the Kelpians that are out there listening in Listenerland, thank you so much for joining us today as we went through and maybe painstakingly talked about episode 5 of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2. We've enjoyed you being with us on this here voyage, because we're Southern. This here voyage right here. So if you liked what you heard, please let us know. We'd love to just hear how we're doing. You know, give us a little check-in, by the way. But also, let us know what you thought of the episode. Did you like it? Did you give this an 8, a 9, a 10? Or did you give it a 1, a 2, or a 3, or somewhere in the middle? Just let us know. Get in contact with us on trtvpod.com. It's where you can connect with us. Check out our Hailing Frequencies portion of our page. We can leave a comment, give us a show idea, or anything and everything in between. You can also find out other ways to listen to the show. You can also support the show by checking us out on all the socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at trtvpod. You can also support us financially on Patreon. All links on the website. Now, if you just want to go straight to an email, that's cool. You can make it so. Go to enter in trtvpod@gmail.com. You can also send us a voice-only transmission to 817-752-4757. Remember, there's a 3-minute time limit before the warp core ejects, so be quick with whatever you say. Please, I don't want to blow up. That being said, if you do want to mail us something like a Doppler or, I don't know, a model of the Cerritos that has a phaser and a very, very small warp core, you can do that. Make sure it gets to us. P.O. Box 2455, Azle, Texas 76098. Thank you so much again for listening to us. And as we leave here today, may you always remember to boldly go and make it so.